Before we get started with today's show, I want to remind you about another great ESPN podcast, Stupidity. This week, he's probably going to chat with Mike Golic Jr. and the Weekend Observations crew, but you know how things go with Stu, so be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to Stupidity as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcast. Let's talk about Daniel. A year ago, he resolved to stop putting off what he wanted to do, get into information technology. Daniel enrolled in My Computer Career and is now already a few months into his IT career. Make 2020 your year. There are millions of unfilled cybersecurity positions in the U.S. right now, and My Computer Career is training people to help fill them. No IT experience or education? No problem. It's not rocket science. It's My Computer Career. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. You could start your new life as an IT pro in months, not years. Attend classes on campus or live online just twice a week to get what you'll need to start your new career. More than just a school, My Computer Career helps you get into the industry by working with hundreds of employers that hire our students. My Computer Career is nationally accredited and financial aid is available for those who qualify, including the GI Bill. Classes start soon, so make new year, new career your resolution and take the free career evaluation today at mycomputercareer.edu. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk about Kyrie Irving apparently taking control of the Nets. Talk about what's going on with that collective bargaining agreement in the NFL. And we got your voicemails. But first, all right, man. I don't exactly know, and we have been talking about this coronavirus for a while here. It is like the primary topic of conversation basically everywhere that you go, not only in this country, I feel like, but in the world. And it's a little tricky because it's like, you know, not funny. And I prefer to kind of stay in the realm of what the is and is not funny is. But hey, man, this thing doesn't stop being polite and started getting real. And when Indian Wells canceled that tournament the night before, that's when I looked up and was like, oh, okay, y'all about it with this. I saw something, I think it was Tisha Thompson of ESPN, who, by the way, doesn't look as you might think. Gabe, have you seen Tisha Thompson? Give it a Google, T-I-S-H-A. Might be surprised. Anyway, one reason that she noted that Indian Wells decided to cancel was because 59% of the attendees would be over the age of 65. Now, and, you know, older people are at much greater risk of not just contracting the virus, but also dying from it. Like, I saw something that, like, I mean, 80 is bigger than 65, certainly, but 80-year-olds have, like, a 13% fatality rate with this disease. Like, yeah, no. Like, it's for real. Like, I live in New York. We had a state of emergency here. We got the most cases of any state, right, in New York. All right. My dad is 83 years old. No lie. I don't know the next time it's safe for me to go home, right? I can't be bringing the subway into my dad's crib. You know how guilty I would be if I killed my pops with the subway? It'd be ridiculous. But anyway, I thought about that, though, with Indian Wells, and I was kind of like, all right, well, I get then why it is that you would say that you could not have spectators, but they were like, no, we ain't doing none of this. Now, I've seen some people make the argument that their reason for canceling the whole thing probably had more to do with the fact that they got insurance on the whole thing. So this is the way they get their money back or whatever it is. Okay, fine. But that's still a lot of money that's out here on the line for people. And what we are about to find out, ladies and gentlemen, is just how greedy all of these sporting entities happen to be, how desperate they are for this bread, how much they want this bread. Because none of this feels safe, right? None of this makes me feel particularly comfortable, especially anything that involves like going, you know, international stuff, going through airports and all of this stuff. Like, it all makes me feel a little bit shaky. I can't speak for anybody else, but it all makes me feel just a little bit shaky. And so my question is, what's it going to take for them to like really shut down stuff in the United States? In whatchamacallit, Santa Clara County in California is where the San Jose Sharks play. That is where Stanford is. Gatherings over 1,000 they can't do? So I don't know what exactly it is that the, whatchamacallit, I don't have any great idea what it is that they're going to be able to do under these circumstances. We've seen the leagues make the decisions that they're not going to allow locker room access. And of course, that's when all the media people pop up and start complaining about it as if anybody gives a damn. Yes, it'll make your work a whole lot better. Like, there is a value to you being in the locker room and talking to these people. Y'all ain't just walking around them stinking naked dudes just because y'all want to. I get it. It makes everything better. It gets you better quotes. It gets better insight. It makes your job a whole lot easier to be in there, man. But it can't be. Like, one player gets that, given the nature of that gig. One player gets that, the whole team's got it. The whole situation is shut up, right? It's all completely shut down. They got no choice. They got to. They cannot allow us to be in there because we ain't exactly the most trustworthy people in the world. Like, what I think a lot of this comes down to, Gabe, you tell me if I'm wrong here. A whole lot of our collective, and I don't even want to say paranoia because I feel like this is all informed. A whole lot of this comes down to, I don't know where your hands been.
Exactly. Like, how much can you trust your fellow man or woman?
Yes, because I don't know about you. I have taken it upon myself. I'm the hand-washing warden over here at the South Street Seaport. Yo, I was so mad. I went to the bathroom, and we got this weird setup in the bathroom. But anyway, I was in the bathroom, and while I was using the urinal, somebody came out of a stall. I wasn't able to see who it was because, you know, I was paying attention to what I was doing. But I tell you, I heard that door open and shut. I ain't hear no water run beforehand. And I want to find out who that was. Come on, man. You don't notice what's going on here. Everybody in here is doing their part. We all doing our part. And our part is ashy hands. Okay? We understand this. We all got the ashy hands. Nobody likes having the ashy hands. Ashy hands is how we got to get down. You got to be in here and you got to wash your hands. And I have learned some things from the internet about, like, the things that people do and do not do in the name of hygiene. Like, I am not a germaphobe. I'm not one of those people that's omnipresently concerned about the creepy crawlies that are here all the time, right? I will admit that while I am a general hand washer, I have been more diligent on the hand washing than I have been. Gabe, I get off that train, first thing I do is go wash my hands. First thing I do, because I can't bring the subway in here right now. A lot of y'all got stuff that's going on. My man Pablo just had a baby, man. He ain't trying to be here around us. They say the kids don't get sick. Don't matter, man. We don't want the little baby to be a carrier or anything like that. Who knows? Last thing I need is Pablo's baby to be the first one to catch the Rona. I don't need no parts of that. Everybody's got to get out here, and everybody's got to do their part. And part of doing your part in this is going to involve shutting down stuff that makes a lot of money. Like, hey, could you believe they shut down South by Southwest?
I can, just because it seems like a lot of the tech companies are trying to be at the very forefront of canceling things, like canceling their own conferences. So, of course, they're not going to try and attend South by Southwest.
Yeah, man. But at the same time, there's a lot of money that already been spent on that. Like, this is catastrophic for the people who do the work around South by Southwest. Like, the last thing, I mean, I don't want to minimize the idea of people losing their lives and stuff like that. But the most lasting thing I think that we're going to deal with, I think that'd be easily relatable to people on this is so bad for the economy. Like, Gabe, are you a stock owner by chance?
Is that what my 401k is?
Yeah.
Okay, so I am.
You don't look at it, do you?
Nah, and I'm not going to.
I don't recommend, man. I was trying to explain that to people. I'm like, look, man, unless you go cash that thing out, ain't no need to sign up for heartbreak. Like, all you gonna do is turn it on and get your heart broken. No, man, this is messing with all kinds of people's money. Like, I feel so bad at the idea that, my guess is there will not be crowds for the NCAA tournament. Like, I figure it'll go on because there's just too much money on the line behind it, and they'll feel like they could come up with any sort of plan in order to get that done. But there's too much money on the line for it for them to shut the whole thing down. That's my read. But they're not going to be able to have people in there. And the thing for me is, if they're not going to have crowds in there, you realize how many people are going to be missing checks because of that? Like, how many people work in that arena and are just not going to be able to make money because of this? So I don't take it lightly, the idea that some of these events are going to have to be shut down. Like, this is really big, and this is going to affect a lot of people in some real strong ways. But, dog, it sounded to me like they're going to have to do it. Gabe, you saw in Italy, they just shut the whole country down.
Oh, yeah. And people are getting, like, charged with crimes if they don't heed to the warnings that the government is giving out to everyone.
Yeah, like it's going to be interesting seeing how this plays out in the West. And I don't feel like I'm talking out of turn in saying this. I feel like in China, the man could come out and say, y'all don't go outside. And people would be like, all right, sounds good to me. Right? And even if it don't sound good to them, they ain't going to go outside. Out here in the West, we got a lot more of a you can't tell me what to do sort of attitude. Where in China, they're kind of like, nah, you can. You can, you have, and you will. Here, we kind of like, man, you don't get to tell us what to do. Man, somebody going to need to tell these people what to do.
How much of that is like American exceptionalism or how much of that is like willful ignorance?
I think a lot of it, I don't even think it's so much, I don't know how much of it is exceptionalism. I think there is a degree of ignorance, but I also think that there's just a general ethos that we have here that I get to decide what I want to do. Like one thing we're not good at as a nation here is doing things in the name of the greater good. In fact, part of the charm and appeal of the United States for so many people is that you do not have to do things in the name of the greater good. Like, you know, I ain't really trying to tell you which politics you be or whatever, but we can be real about this. Authoritarian regimes typically operate on the idea of this is what's best for you. And it's kind of an uncomfortable play because you really have to take somebody's word for the idea that it is best for you. But that's kind of how those things work. Like the idea of communism is really, hey, this is what's best for everybody. This is what's best for the greater good. Fidel Castro could be described, if no other way, as a utilitarian, the greatest good for the greatest number. That's the game. These are all things that we as Americans say that we don't like. If I decide I want to kill everybody by going and getting this Rona and bringing it into your house, then that's what I get to do because you can't tell me what to do. Man, somebody going to have to get out here and tell people what to do. And the closest thing that you're going to get to that is people just canceling events. That's it. Like, have you gotten any emails from people? Because you get a lot of emails, like my building emailed me. You get all the emails from people where they're talking about all the preventative measures and the things that they're doing as it relates to the coronavirus. And you could tell the ones that are just like, look, man, we need this bread. They're like, no, don't worry. We'll be cleaning up very closely. We'll be scrubbing down every surface, everything else. Don't you worry. We got you. We got you. Please come spend money. I saw something where five Broadway shows are slashing their prices in order to get people in there. And you know, it's dangerous for Broadway shows. It'd be old people in there. Last thing you need is, I caught this when I came to see insert play here. Nobody needs that. Nobody wants that. So, Gabe, what you going to do? How you staying safe?
Washing my hands, wiping down surfaces, taking vitamin C, the usual cleanliness, hygiene, illness prevention type stuff.
Y'all got anybody up there in the office that y'all looking at funny? Like, I feel like every office has got somebody that they looking at funny.
I don't know if there's someone in particular, but there was an email sent around that was kind of a little alarmist, I think, in my opinion, where it's like, oh, there was someone that had a cough in X control room.
That's all it takes.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, it is, you know, absolutely mandatory to wipe everything down, wipe off your mics, all that sort of stuff. And I was like, well, I don't know if I'm going to that control room now.
Hold on. Speaking of which, anybody wipe this mic down that I'm on right now? Ain't no can in here. Ain't nobody thinking about me.
Well, I mean, big part of this is you got to start thinking about yourself because other people won't, right?
Yes.
So, like, you got to be bringing wipes with you. You got to be bringing Purell with you. And, by the way, went to insert department store name here yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And they're cleaned out, just FYI. So, if you're trying to go, that time passed.
Yo, my thing is, why ain't they buying soap?
Yes. Okay. That was my point too. I was like, okay, you're buying all this Purell. You're buying all these antibacterial wipes. Like, you know, you can just wash your hands with soap, right?
Yo, that's the laziest in the world. Like, are people just really opposed to washing their hands in that way? Why don't you buy some soap? Like, I keep hearing about all these runs on this hand sanitizer and I've seen somewhere somebody was like, they charge like $79 for hand sanitizer. Anybody actually paying for that when there's soap right there? Like, if you out here hanging out in places where you can't get to no running water, man, you need to get yourself into the 20th century, let alone the 21st.
Now, with the Purell, does it strike you as if it, like, makes the germs, like, more dead? Because that's what it seems like for people. It's like, oh, this has alcohol in it, so I'm really good.
No, I don't think that's what they're doing. I think they out here just trying not to have to go wash their hands. I don't have an explanation for why that is. But hey, let me ask you this. You ain't got to put no names on this. You just let me know. I ain't spent a lot of time in Bristol lately. Y'all got anybody in the office that's musty? Like, is there a musty dude walking around? Or, this happens every now and then, a musty lady walking around?
Not that I can think of.
Like, I feel like if you're the person that shows up to work musty, and most of y'all got somebody at your job who show up to work a little bit musty, right? Or just smell bad for whatever reason. I feel like that's the number one person I'm worried about getting that virus, right? Like, that's the person that we need to have a long talk with, where they send that email out that's like blind CC. Like, I wonder if they do this. HR send that blind CC email to the whole staff to let them know what they need to do, except it's really not going to the whole staff. It's just going to that one person. Just to let you know, we need better from you.
We keep a small circle in the digital audio group.
Gotcha. Somebody around there must be. Like, there's somebody on the floor of every job that everybody's looking at, and they go to HR like, look, can you go talk to him? Please? Like, just to make sure. You think the draft is going to go on the way they say they want it to go on?
It's a whole lot of DAP.
Yeah. Oh, no. Roger Goodell been working on his DAP game for 4 months in preparation of this draft. All down the drain. Adam Silver is going to be the most this uneventful draft of all time for him when he gets up there. Just going to be a lot of fist pounds.
Well, it's also like attendance. Yeah. Like, are they going to be doing it? Like you had said on Twitter, I think, are they going to be doing these things in front of sound stages? Because they're canceling these tournaments now. You referred to Indian Wells before. Like, how close are we now to doing games in front of empty stadiums?
I think by the end of the week.
So probably by the time people listen to this podcast, they're going to be playing games in front of
empty stadiums. There's a good chance. It is hard for me to imagine the NCAA tournament at this point being played in front of crowds. I can't see it. It just seems to be too risky. Like, looking at the way that things escalated in other countries, that's about the rate, right? Like, that's about where we're going to get to. And people are like, no, man, we're just not going to, they can't let them in. Cause the problem they got is people are going to show up. Like, if people already spent that money or they can get a discount, people are willing to show up and roll the dice on it. And they're just going to be carrying this thing all over the place. Did you see where Princeton has told students that after spring break, you don't have to come back to campus?
That's a lot of schools now. That's a lot of schools. You know, they're switching it to online only, or they're finishing out the semester, or, you know, the quarter, and then switching to online only. I was thinking about, you know, all the professors that are going to have to change their syllabi, you know, to make it. It's hard.
Well, also, the losers in this are students. Have you taken online college courses?
I have. Okay. I took one last semester.
Okay, I have not, right? So I don't have a great handle on it. But it's hard for me to believe that the educational experience that you receive from an online class is as fulfilling as what you get from actually being in class if you're doing it right. Like, I feel like the students are losing in the course of this, right? Like, it's kind of like I got a therapist, right? And if I got to go out of town, the therapist would be like, well, we can do a virtual session. And I'm like, nah, if I'm going to pay these prices, I'm about to be sitting across from you, right? I'm getting the full price out of this. This is not the same thing as talking on Skype. And that's always the thing I kind of wonder about with these digital classes. But I thought about this as spring break. Can you think of anything helping spread this thing into more places than a bunch of college students going to get ripped on beaches and do God knows what? And then go back to their schools? Like, you know how dangerous that can be?
Yeah, completely. I mean, are people canceling their travel plans?
Oh, good question. By the way, let me tell you what would really stink. The last place a college student wants to be is back at the crib.
Were you that type of kid? I was the type of kid who did not go home at all and just stayed in the town where my school was all 4 years.
Yeah, see, my parents lived in the town I went to school in. So that was never really going to be my play anyway. But I remember like that first summer, you'd be so excited. School's out. Fire. I ain't got to do nothing. How many days it take? 3, maybe 4 before you're like, man, I wish school would start back. I mean, you can't smoke it. Like, maybe you can, but you can't smoke at your mama's house. You can't bring company over to your mama's house. You can't just be out here drinking terrible alcohol at your mama's house. Nobody wants to go back to their parents' house after they've been in college. Like, that's a giant L, but y'all can't be bringing that Rona back from Puerto Vallarta or wherever it was you was down there acting a fool. No, we can't have that. You know? So this is what it's going to come to when sports is going to wind up having to take the lead on a lot of stuff. And something I think a lot of people are going to learn or realize in the course of this is, as spectators, you are part of the production in a way that you don't realize. You pay for the ticket, you get to go, all that stuff. But what you are is an extra in the TV show, right? You are a background player that helps make the show more interesting. Because, man, once you start seeing these games with no people in them and you start hearing that ball bounce on the ground and echo, it is going to be surreal. It is not what we are accustomed to, but it's what we got to do. And I guess I'm torn because I care about people that make the little money in this, but I don't care that much about the people that make the big money in this. Except if the people that make the big money don't make the big money, then the folks that need the little money aren't going to get the little money. Like, that's where we are. That's where this is going to be. And I will just close this with four words. Wash your damn hands. We'll be back in a minute to talk about the Nets firing their coach. But first, when it comes to scoring great hires for your business, you may be up against a few obstacles like an overwhelming amount of resumes, too many applicants but not enough of the right ones, trouble spotting the most qualified candidates in a sea of possibilities. That's why you need ZipRecruiter on your team. No matter the industry, healthcare to manufacturing to business services, ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster and easier. And now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. First, when you post a job on ZipRecruiter, it gets sent out to over 100 top job sites. Then ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology hustles for you to find people with the right experience for your job and invites them to apply. In fact, check out this stat. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. So add ZipRecruiter to your roster to help you win the hiring game. To try ZipRecruiter for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/B-O-M-A-N-I. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, Gabe. Did Kyrie Irving already fire the coach?
Define fire.
Great question. Kenny Atkinson, who is not African-American. Apparently he and Tisha Thompson went to high school together. They didn't, but whatever.
White Tisha, by the way.
White Tisha, hashtag. White Kenny. How long? I don't know about you, but Kenny Atkinson had that job with the Nets for quite a while before I realized that he was white. I mean, not only is his name Kenny Atkinson, but he started coaching them when they were terrible and there was no, like, reason for hope. And that's normally when the black dude gets the job. Consider my surprise when I looked up and he was Kenny. Like, I wonder, actually, if before he got into basketball, he was going by Ken or he was going by Kenneth. And then he realized that his applications were being denied because they thought that he was a white dude. And so he put down Kenny and he started getting more calls for, like, basketball related stuff. You can see it, right? There's a lot of black people that have, like, shall we say, obviously black first names, but their middle name is like Nicole. So they put Nicole on the job application. Maybe Kenny was doing that in reverse. Anyway, he used to coach the Nets. Now he doesn't coach the Nets anymore. And it seems that they said he was not able to connect with the players. And he seemed to connect just fine with the players last year. So apparently he must have been struggling to connect with the new players. And the new players are really Kyrie Irving, DeAndre Jordan, and Kevin Durant. I put Kevin Durant third because Kevin Durant hadn't even played yet. And honestly, if I thought that Kevin Durant was the type to try to move out of coach, I would like to think that he would have fired Scott Brooks a long time ago there in Oklahoma City. Did you see the DeAndre Jordan post game?
I saw the hat he was wearing.
Oh, yeah, he looked like Waylon Jennings. But you see, when he was like, if you're going to talk about the new guys, talk about all the new guys. I'm new. Gary Temple is new. Who else did he say was new? He mentioned Gary Temple. He mentioned some other dude. He just mentioned a bunch of dudes that didn't matter. And he's like, if you want to talk about the new guys, talk about all the new guys. No, fool, we talking about Kyrie. Right? Right or wrong, we talking about Kyrie. And, Gabe, you got the music? You ready with the music?
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. That's when you lose the team, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's when it's a wrap for you on losing the team. Now, I'm not a person that has a problem with the idea of a player moving a coach out. I don't. You got the clout to make that happen. You think this is the move that needs to be made? You go ahead and do it. I have some times in my life that I look back on it and wish that I had tried to do such a thing. It probably wouldn't work on my end, but I would have been better off if I could have made that happen. Like, that's the game. So Kyrie got old buddy out of there, apparently. We can't say this definitively, but I think we would all agree that if Kyrie and Kevin Durant wanted Kenny Atkinson to still be the coach, he would be the coach. And I also acknowledge, by the way, and I think that this is important, Atkinson is apparently a very good coach for a team on the come up, but he's a bit of a micromanager, right? So you hear a lot about how good he is at developing talent. A lot of developing talent is staying on guys about little things. A lot of coaching superstars is letting little things slide. You kind of have to figure out what the midpoint is on those things or how to get to a place where you can treat one guy a certain way and everybody else. And maybe Atkinson was not in a place where you could do that because the Nets were so proud of their culture. And if you're so proud of your culture, it is very difficult for you to make that culture one that operates differently for different people. Miami has figured out how to pull that off because they did it with LeBron James. They were like, no, this is how it goes for everybody. Nope. You ain't going to be late all the time. No, none of that stuff's happening. This is our get down. You either get on or you get gone. LeBron tried to get Spo moved out of there. Pat Riley was like, nah, that's not really how it works down here. Kenny Atkinson ain't no Pat Riley, right? Like, he doesn't have the game to pull that off. I gave him credit for looking around, apparently, and being like, I can wait for Kyrie to get me fired, or I can keep it moving right now and go get me another job. Like, to be able to look around and realize this is not going to improve, and since it's not going to improve, I'm going to move on. Not a bad play on his part. Now, let me ask you this, Gabe. Who in the world do you think wants to coach Kyrie?
Is there like a... Well, Kyrie played for Coach K. There's not like a past coach... Well, actually, what about Ty Lue?
So my man Vinny Goodwill of Yahoo says that Kyrie would like Ty Lue. My question for you is not about who Kyrie would want to coach him. Do you think Ty Lue wants to coach Kyrie?
Well, isn't who Kyrie would want to have as a coach more important, because there's going to be a short list, right? And that's first. And then second, if it's somebody that Kyrie wants but maybe doesn't necessarily want Kyrie, then your boy Josiah is just going to empty the bag.
Well, that is interesting. Now, this is what I say to that. It is, yes, more important that it's somebody that Kyrie and Kevin Durant wants, right? Like, they both got to be on board with this, and I kind of wonder how much, like, whether they are going to speak as one voice in their time there, or they are going to speak as two guys, you know, as two voices. I don't know. But I do agree that, yes, that is more important, but it doesn't matter who Kyrie wants if that person doesn't want to coach Kyrie, unless, as you said, Josiah backs up all that Alibaba money and drops it off. But I ask you to remember this about Ty Lue. Remember when Ty Lue was having the panic attacks in Cleveland?
Yes.
That was the year after Kyrie left. And by the way, that, from what we can tell, was a version of Kyrie that seemed to have it all together in a way that the current version of Kyrie does not have it all together. If you are asked to coach Kyrie, Kyrie may want you to be the coach, but does Kyrie want you to coach him? And see, that's where it gets interesting with Lue. Let us not forget, one of the things that everybody and their mom gave Lue credit for was Lue was willing to stand up to LeBron James. Right? Remember all those breathless columns about Lou telling LeBron to shut up and being in, you know, halftime of the game and bringing it to LeBron and telling him that he's not doing enough, he's got to do more, so forth and so on, all that stuff. You think Kyrie's going for that? Like, do we think that this Kyrie can handle that?
No.
Like, that's the thing for me on this. The Nets might have made the right move and it might have had to be done. But somebody's going to have to be the coach here, and I don't really know who it is, because what they're going to need is somebody who commands, like, a broad level of respect. I don't think that you're going to be able to go, like, get a version of Nick Nurse, for example, right? Like, the lead assistant guy. I don't think you're going to be able to make that guy the head coach, right? And by the way, I've come around on Nick Nurse. I wasn't here for him this time last year. I see it now, right? So, like, when I say a Nick Nurse type of guy, I mean a guy that could be a very good coach for the team. But is Kyrie going to listen to that? No. My guess is you would need a name with some clout to get Kyrie to listen. How many guys with clout and options are then going to want to come in and coach Kyrie? And I add a level to that when it comes to coaching this Nets team. How good are they actually going to be? Like, best case scenario with Kyrie and whatever version of Kevin Durant we get back, keeping in mind we have no idea what version of Kevin Durant we're going to get. Who's going to want to do that? And this was the thing. They bet on the talent of Kyrie, which is a bet I think that most people would make, right? But they bet on the talent of Kyrie. But what are you going to do next? And again, we haven't even added Kevin Durant to the situation. What's got to be most frustrating for the Nets in all of this, by the way, all this drama. They've gotten only 20 games of Kyrie, but still, they've had Kyrie. Dude, they do not matter here at all. Have you looked at their TV ratings?
They're not good.
They're dreadful. Like, they still... I don't know how much it'll take for them to matter. Even the sorry Knicks. The sorry Knicks get more attention here for kicking Spike Lee out of the building than the Nets get for firing the coach. Like, I care about the Nets firing the coach from a national perspective. From living here, nobody cares. Nobody cares. All that seems to me to be a miserable situation to try to sign up for to be the coach. And by the way, a new owner that I am not, it doesn't sound to me like Josiah really understands how the NBA works yet. Like, all of this. So, you may sign up for Josiah's money, but I don't know if that's going to be able to buy you your sanity, because it seems like that'll be shaky after a couple years of dealing with this squad. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about the NFL collective bargaining agreement, but first, tired of that 230 feeling? You're not alone. In fact, research shows that more than 70% of us hit the wall after lunch. Let a 5-hour energy shot help you leap over that wall instead of crashing into it. Anyone who travels frequently knows how tiring it can be. Whether you're on business or on vacation, 5-Hour Energy Shot can help you stay alert and energized wherever you may be headed. 5-Hour Energy helps you get through your crazy on-the-go life. With zero sugar, 4 calories, and a convenient portable size, it's the perfect pick-me-up for busy, hard-working people. Now it comes in 2 extra-strength tropical teas. Strawberry banana and tropical burst. They're great. They are delicious and can take you to a tropical on-the-go experience. Try them both, then go online to shop5hourenergy.com and use the code BOMANI to receive a one-time offer of 10% off your order. That's shop5hourenergy.com. Use the code BOMANI. Go to shop5hourenergy.com and use the code BOMANI to receive a one-time offer of 10%. 5-Hour Energy. Energy on the go. Gabe, you ever been part of a union?
I have not.
Neither have I, right? Maybe, I mean, sign of the times, other stuff. I've never been a part of the union. But it sounds like being part of the NFL union, whether you're, I mean, the NFL Players Association, whether you're running it or just a dude in it, man, it seems like it's never a dull moment over there. You seen this thing now where guys like want to unvote?
Explain that.
Basically, about 1,000 votes for the new collective bargaining agreement have already been put in. There are now players who want to take their vote back. Apparently the Players Association sent to the players, a side by side sort of thing from the old CBA and the new CBA. And apparently seeing those things side by side made some guys be like, hey, wait a minute. And so we got some guys that now want to take their votes back. And the Players Association is saying, no, you can't take your vote back, which I think is the policy that they have to have, because otherwise they open themselves up to rampant levels of corruption, or at least the perception of corruption by doing that. The vote's in, the vote's got to stay. I get that. But guys now kind of want to take their votes back. Russell Okung, who is running or wants to run at the very least for president of the Players Association, he has filed a complaint, I think it's with the National Labor Relations Board, saying that he believes that D. Smith, the executive director of the NFLPA, has negotiated in bad faith. Yeah, you got the superstar class of players saying pretty loudly that they think that this is a bad deal. But the problem is that 65% of the league makes like a minimum salary. And so for them, it's an extra 100 G's right away. So it then becomes a great deal. All of this is going on. I've heard and I've been told that there's a perception that in the leadership of the players that there's poison in the well. Like, there's so much that's there. And look, this is an impossible union to run for a number of reasons. And a big part of it is the interests of each individual player are so disparate. Like, they're all in it for so many different things and for so many different reasons. It's very hard to come up with something that's just going to be an across the board, this works for all. Like, it's really difficult. And I don't blame anybody in this union now, nor will I ever blame anybody in this union for this idea of, man, the players just won't stay together. Man, the players have so many different things that are going on here. And this is all on display. But I saw something I was kind of thinking about the other day, and I don't think I'd really said it out loud anywhere, but I saw my man Patrick Ruby tweeted about it. The divisions and separations that you have among the players in 2020 as they try to deal with this collective bargaining agreement, they arise from the 2011 agreement. Because what the 2011 agreement did was, A, it enacted the rookie salary cap, or like the, you know, the slotted salaries on the draft picks. I don't think calling a rookie salary cap is the best way to do it, but you understand what I'm saying. That we got that number one from the CBA. But what you also got from that was an increase in veteran minimum salaries. And one thing that the veterans had felt, and this is what happens in this labor stuff, because the young guys that these, that get affected by this don't have votes. What you wind up with is the vets looking at all the money that the rookies are getting and being like, they ain't even done nothing in the league. And then they get salty and they're like, that money needs to be coming to us, right? And so then they try to get the money. Got it. But the problem is, since the veteran minimum increases, what does it do? It actually makes the rookies more attractive because their minimum salaries are lower. And so as a result, and I need to see how those numbers have changed since 2010, but as a result, you wind up with more young players on minimum salaries. And you have that because they made it such that it was too expensive for a lot of the veterans to play. It was too expensive to acquire a lot of them. And so you have a league full of guys, as a result, making these minimum salaries. Like back in the day, if you were like a fifth round pick, you might make the team, you might not, but that wasn't really a guarantee. You go look year to year, like you can go in the wiki and look up every team's draft classes, and go look at how many of them were on the opening day roster. It's not a 100% rate, but it's not terribly far from it at this point. They're going to put you on the team if you're a rookie because you're cheap. It's just more inexpensive. And so now you wind up with this veteran middle class of players. It doesn't really exist anymore. It's not there. And so you got this huge glut of players that are making what is honestly next to nothing. And I understand that for people listening to this, hearing me talk about how $500,000 a year is next to nothing, it ain't going to make you feel good. But $500,000 when you're starting from zero and you got to pay a lot of out-of-pocket expenses in order for you to continue making that $500,000, it's just not as much money as people believe it is. And I don't blame you for being like, I wish somebody was paying me $500,000. And I don't blame you for wishing it. And I'm just here to tell you that if you're a football player and somebody was paying you $500,000, it wouldn't take long before you was like, damn, this ain't as much money as I thought. That first tax day would beat you over the head, boy. FICA coming down. You know, you don't want that. You don't really want to be in that place. But there's no winning for everybody. This CBA, they're going to be complaining about it all the way to the end, and then the new one's going to come around, and the same sort of thing is going to happen. I still believe the players have leverage right now because the owners want to hurry up and get these TV deals done, right? They really want to hurry up and get these TV deals done. And so you can get something from them, I believe, in this place for that reason. I believe that you can get it done, right? Because they want to go do something fast. And you kind of like, hey, we can wait. We can wait. I feel like you can then make this happen. The players just have to make sure that the union doesn't devour itself in the process. You got a guy like Aaron Rodgers being like, you see Aaron Rodgers talk about how disappointed he was that he didn't get any responses when he sent things out to guys about the collective bargaining agreement.
Didn't get a read notification in the group text.
Well, here's what I'm curious about. How did Aaron Rodgers say this to these guys? Did he say, hey, if you got any questions, let me know. Here are my thoughts. Or did he say, since I know you're not going to read this anyway and you might not understand it if you did, here are my thoughts. Because I feel like the latter is possible. He's got that rep game. They don't like him that much. He gets that rep. So who knows? Ain't nobody going to miss no games in this. That's the big thing. Nobody's going to miss any games. So, like, I don't really trip on the way that it's going to go. I do think, though, for the players, and I understand why they're a little more shook because they don't have as much security as others. Like, you know how when these things come around, Gabe, people talk about that this is just millionaires versus billionaires? It ain't that many millionaires. If 65% of the league is making minimum salary, those dudes aren't millionaires. Like, we have to stop saying that this is millionaires versus billionaires. This is guys who make hundreds of thousands of dollars. We ain't really got no term for them. But that's who we got. But it's not millionaires and billionaires. Those dudes that are really driving this, the mass of the force, these guys don't make millions of dollars. These guys won't walk away with millions of dollars. So I get why they get shook by the idea of missing games. But these owners really don't want to miss games. And you know how bad the owners don't really want to miss games, man? They willing to let y'all come out here and roll the dice on the coronavirus to make sure they get that money. I ain't trying to miss no games. Like, if it really came down to it, I feel like the players could fold their arms and wait. I don't think the players need to worry about guys crossing the picket line because it's a completely different set of circumstances than it was before when it comes to that. And by the way, if you are worried about guys crossing the picket line, kick it how baseball kicks it. You know how baseball kicks it? If you do something like that, you'll never be down with us. You will be ostracized. You will be a leper, basically, in your own clubhouse. That's what you got to do if you're going to make this happen. But they'll get it done. They will. It's just interesting to see on display, and I hope that people understand that at the root of our difficulty in understanding collective bargaining is us saying it's billionaires versus millionaires. Nope. It's like just about every other place in the world. It's billionaires against everybody else.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, this first story comes from Nature.
Hi, this is Sangeeta Singh-Kurtz with New York Magazine. 6 months ago, a Komodo dragon at Nashville's Chattanooga Zoo gave birth to 3 baby lizards, and a recent DNA test revealed that she conceived the babies without the help of a male partner, even though she had been living with one. The zoo explained that this happened through a process called parthenogenesis. It's a type of asexual reproduction where the female produces offspring without male fertilization. So the zoo also explained that this process evolved in Komodo dragons as a result of how they live in the wild. So apparently their lives are very isolated and they become violent when approached, which has allowed the female lizards to develop this method of male-free reproduction, which must be nice.
You heard what she slid in there at the end gate.
Which must be nice.
Which must be nice. That was, yo, what a wonderfully delivered piece of shade. Which must be nice. What you got, man? Which must be nice kind of threw me off course.
Yeah, truth, that sounds like shade.
Like, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I hear that being a single mother is a bad thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I hear that it comes with a lot of work. You gotta grind. She's like, oh man, I'm trying to live like the Komodo dragons do. We'll need y'all. Which, I mean, possibly true. Possibly true.
It's an interesting story, right? Interesting. Interesting that the Komodo dragon has been able to, you know, evolve and develop these sorts of functions.
Yeah, no, I did find it interesting, but also she was talking about what got us to that point before, which must be nice, was it sounds like the idea, like, this is for defense in part, right? Like, you need an army. And by the way, this feel like a half step away from, like, cloning. Because if we're producing the offspring from one, like, only one set of genetic material, is the Komodo dragon cloning itself? And are we going to have to, like, be wary of all these Komodo dragons that's going to come take over the world?
To your point, it seems like it's kind of out of necessity as opposed to just like each Komodo dragon developing its own army.
Yes, but put enough Komodo dragons together. They said it's for defense, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, what'll defend you better than an army? I am totally fascinated by this. It must be nice.
All right, this next story comes from business.
My name's Greg Rosalski. I'm a reporter at NPR's Planet Money. I just wrote this piece called Why America is Losing the Toilet Race. So a little context here. I went to Japan for the first time, and I really fell in love with the country. I mean, the food is amazing. The people are really, really just great. The culture is fascinating. But what I really fell in love with was their toilets. Basically, everywhere you go, there are these toilets that have bidets. So, you know, it squirts water up at your butt, and you don't have to use as much toilet paper. It's just like much more sanitary and clean. They have heated seats. There's a panel next to them. You press a button and there'll be like ambient rain noises, so you don't hear fart noises in the stalls. I could go on. These toilets are amazing. You know, then I come back to the United States and our toilets are like stuck in like, you know, the Stone Age or something. We've basically had the same technology for decades. Like, you could probably go back to like the 1890s, you know, before like electricity, and we would be using the same toilets. So it got me thinking, you know, like, why is that? And I called up an executive at Toto, and they put me in touch with this guy, Bill Strang, at Toto USA. And he kind of took me through the tech that they have. He basically told me US toilets are effectively a bedpan with a drain, which I found it resonated with me. But, you know, these toilets, they never really took off in the United States. Toto introduced what's called the washlet, which is a bidet, heated seat, and like a deodorizer back in 1990. And it just never took off here. So I talked to some economists. There's a concept called technology diffusion. And, you know, I kind of explored, like, why hasn't this technology come here? And it's pretty clear that it just boils down to culture. It's like a simple explanation. I just think, like, if you go to Japan, people take their shoes off when you go indoors. People wash their hands all the time. When you're at a restaurant, they give you, you know, a hot towel to, like, scrub your hands. And it just feels much different than back home. And so I think that's what it kind of boils down to, is obviously there's not a demand for these things in the United States. And the question is, how do we start the revolution, guys? Let's start the toilet revolution. I hope your podcast helps spread the word. It's time for new toilets in America.
Yo, Pablo will leave that army. He bought a house, and that's the one of the big things for him about that is that he's got one of these Japanese toilets. He has been extolling the virtues of these Japanese toilets for a long time. I have to tell you, I used to have, what do they call it, Gabe, the thing that shoot the water in your booty?
Bidet.
Yeah. I used to have one of those at the crib when I was in Miami. Just to let you know, be very careful with the temperature of the water. Just throwing it out there, right? Like, you know how you can run some bath water and the temperature be too hot, but you like put your, you know, you put your toe in to feel it, and then you figure it out. You don't put your toe in the bidet. You don't go toe first into the bidet. Nope. You get right to the point. And that, be careful with your temperature choice. That's all I'm telling you. Have you used one of these Japanese toilets before?
I have used a bidet. I don't know if it was considered to be one of the Japanese.
Oh, no. I'm talking about like the one he was describing.
No, I have not. I've only used a bidet once in my life. A friend of mine in college who lived in Malibu had a very nice house. Went to his house, stayed over. I was like, whoa, what are these? Got to check this out. It was a unique experience.
I got to tell you, though, like, as someone who used to have one, when you need it, oh, it comes in handy. Just to let you know. It's better for emergencies than just luxury situation. When you need it, it's clutch. But now the Japanese joints, they got like all this different stuff on it, everything else. And my man's got a point, like, why is this revolution not come here? And the answer probably is around how much them things cost. Because in the end, people in America are kind of just trying to get in and get out. You know what I mean? Right? That's kind of where they're going with this. Get in and to get out. This sounds like a much more luxurious experience where you kind of post up in the bathroom in Japan. And I don't know about you, but I don't, especially like a public bathroom. I ain't trying to hang out there. And the nasty Americans, if you had them Japanese toilets in public bathrooms, man, you know how like embarrassed the Japanese makers of them toilets would be when they find out how we treat each other here. I'm just saying, you haven't been to Japan, have you?
I have not. I'd like to.
Yeah, I'm curious, but like, you know, sometimes you walk into a public bathroom and that thing is like snatching the shoes off your feet. Something tells me they don't get down like that in Japan. They got more respect.
All right, this last story comes from music.
What's up, y'all? This is Tanae Hudson coming to you live from MadameNoir.com, and today we're going to talk about Megan Thee Stallion. So last week, the Houston hottie paid a visit to The Breakfast Club, and besides talking about her new EP, Sugar, she also spoke about her GPA over at Texas Southern University. Now, when asked by Charlamagne Tha God, she cringed a little bit because her GPA is at a 2.8 right now, which it sounds like she's not too proud of. Now, her honesty led to her being dragged on Twitter. One user even joked that she couldn't graduate with a GPA that low. But many came to her defense and understood that she's not the average student. She has shows every other night, she has photo shoots, interviews, and she's in the studio. So she has more on her plate than just a 5 or 10 page paper. On top of trying to meet the demands of being one of hip hop's hottest artists right now, she also suffered 2 terrible losses in her family last year back to back. Last March, her mother and grandmother passed away. After suffering those heartbreaking experiences, she still pushed through like the hot girl that she is.
Wait a minute, when did 2.8 become a bad GPA?
Yeah, I was like, well, what kind of GPA do you have?
Yo, I kept waiting for, like, was there something that I was missing here about this? Like, yo, you know the world is full of haters when you are asking somebody to apologize for their 2.8 GPA. Somebody was like, you can't even graduate with a 2.8 GPA. And I can only say one thing about that person, and I feel like I can say this with confidence. And Gabe, I think you'll agree with me. That's a person who never went to college. Like, no shade to you for not going to college. But the majority of the people at a college graduation had a GPA of 2.8 or below, unless you had one of them places with rampant grade inflation. I couldn't believe that she was, first of all, I couldn't believe they asked her what her GPA was. That's silly. I wouldn't have told them nothing, but she told them a 2.8, and people on the internet really tried to be like, oh man, that girl's stupid. What are you talking about? A 2.8? First of all, hey man, congratulations to you if you got a 4.0 in college. I mean this. Like, if you did that, there is a level on which that is impressive. Counterpoint, you probably should have been having more fun. Just a thought, right? Should have been having more fun, or maybe you should have been taking some harder classes. I don't know what it is, but I feel like if I had wanted to get a 4.0 in college, I could have gotten a 4.0, and that wouldn't have been any fun. Any fun whatsoever, right? So, like, you Megan Thee Stallion, you still pull down a 2.8. I don't care if you're doing shows or not, right? Like, even that one, that, you know, when she doing shows every night or whatever, you ain't got to give no explanation for why a 2.8 is appropriate. If the honor roll, look, if a 2.8 was bad, there wouldn't be no such thing as an honor roll. Everybody would be on the honor roll if a 2.8 is bad. It wouldn't be no honor roll. It would just be attendance. The roll. That's all it would be. All right, we'll be back in a minute with your voicemails, but first, basketball season is heating up. Some teams are coming together while others are falling apart. It's their drive and momentum that will determine who raises the trophy at the end of the season. Goodyear knows that no matter what road we're on, movement is the key to unlocking our potential. Because growth isn't a straight line, it's a winding road traveled in pursuit of possibility. It's time to discover what possibilities lay ahead. Goodyear, more driven.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. You had an interesting idea as to what we should do for the social segment this week. Would you like to share it?
Yeah, man. I just figured that you probably seen somebody who's really gone the extra mile trying to protect themselves from the coronavirus. So just curious what some of the things are that y'all done seen.
There were some interesting ones. Not a lot of, like, really unique cases, but there were some interesting ones that I thought would spark discussion. Our three listeners that are joining none of them mention their names and where they're from. So there may be some sort of, they're trying to protect themselves. But this first voicemail, the guy talked about how he tried to get his mom to involve her dog in it.
Hey, Babani. So I told my mom to, like, you know, avoid, like, people petting the dog, like, you know, tell, like, random people, because, you know, she has a husky, And it's a beautiful husky, blue eyes, and a lot of people always come up to her. I'm like, hey, I told her to like, you know, tell people that she has fleas or like, you know, to have ticks, to like, you know, avoid, you know, touching other, you know, the dog, you know, so then, you know, she doesn't touch her, you know, lick my face and stuff. But yeah, man. All right, bro. I love you, man. I love Poppy the Epitard. I know you're your favorite son. And, bro, keep doing your thing, man. Love you, man. And I'm from Miami, and I love you, bro. You're the best, man. You're so smart.
Well, I say thank you to that part. And, Gabe, can you, like, summarize what he said again just to make sure I got that right?
So basically told his mom to act like her husky has fleas or some sort of illness or what have you that dogs get, so that people wouldn't want to pet her dog and would stay away from her and not get her sick.
Ah, interesting. But then my response would be, why don't all y'all leave if your dog got fleas? Sound like that dog go too many places as is. Yo, people be bringing dogs everywhere. Makeup artist brought the dog in here into the office the other day. I was like, why is the dog here? She's like, you know how I feel about my dog. I'm like, why is the dog here? And then next thing you know, everybody's just like grabbing on the dog. I just don't understand why people feel why people think it's okay to bring their dogs in public shared spaces.
Well, so there's like one hand washes the other type of thing going on here. People have dogs, think that everybody loves their dogs, right? Think that everyone loves dogs, not just their dog, not just dogs in general, but their dog, right? And then that gets reinforced by when people go and take their dogs out somewhere, and you got a bunch of people on the street being like, oh my God, oh, it's so cute. So it's reinforced.
Yo, and people do stuff like bring their dogs to restaurants and then chain them up and then go to the bathroom and just leave the dog there. I don't know your dog. Like people, it's just the most selfish thing in the world, right? And they think nobody minds, but the reason they're doing it is just because they want to.
Yeah. Dogs are participating in this now.
Yes.
All right, this next one talked about the lengths that people go to or not go to with rec basketball leagues.
Yeah, man. So I referee basketball games for youth. And you know people know how to act in youth sports. So it was a hard, tested game, real competitive, aggressive. So after the game, the losing team decided not to shake hands, just to give like the elbow. So the coach said, what's going on? We shake hands. He's like, man, with the coronavirus going around, man, we just trying to be precautious with our players. But the other coach is like, we just played a whole game for 32 minutes where we pushing, touching each other. So now you don't want to shake hands? He's like, my bad, man. We just got to be this way. And he just took his team and walked out the gym. I don't know if it was bad sportsmanship or he didn't want none of his kids to get sick, but it was the first crazy thing I saw.
Nah, Gabe, I think shutting down the DAP, that ain't crazy. We've been a DAP-free office now for a couple weeks here.
Yeah, it's not crazy at all. I mean, that's like the first type of thing that people are advising is like, don't do the handshake, do like the fist bump or do some sort of elbow thing that people are advising, which I've never really seen that's not really something that people do. But what I did find interesting about this with the point that the guy was trying to make was though, you know, during the game, you're bouncing the ball with your hand.
That's true.
An open
late.
Hand.
It's a little late.
It's a little late. Everybody's touching the ball.
Yo, that's an argument for canceling all the games.
It is. It really is. I mean, you're operating under the assumption that no player is sick and that you can prevent them from getting sick somehow. But, I mean, there are a lot of people out there who could be sick that they don't know that they're sick or, you know, sort of silent carrier type of thing.
Yeah. No. Yo, man, this is just all bad. Yo, baseball, they got to chill out with all that spitting, don't they?
Yeah, the dip cups.
Yeah. Don't spit on the ball. You know what I mean? Like, nah. Yeah.
All right, this last one, this guy talked about his mom self-quarantining him and his brothers.
Okay, Bo, so I'm 21. This story probably happened like 10 years ago. I was playing Little League football. Me and my dad ended up getting sick. We can't like caught that. I think it was swine flu at the time. So we're playing football. You know, I'm almost 14. My dad's a coach. So my mom was like, look, you know, y'all can't go anywhere. We can't leave. Mind you, like, we're mid-season. We suck, but, you know, everything's going on. But basically, my mom locked us in the house for, like, 2 weeks. You know what I'm saying? My brother, he's up in his room. Like, I was quarantined in my room. My dad's quarantined to his room. You know, my mom's sleeping downstairs on the couch. Like, we're not getting – we just eating soup, ginger ale, crackers every day. I hadn't seen my friends in I don't know how long. Makeup work was crazy. But, like, it was so – like, what hurt me the most is, like, I'm missing out on, like, all, like, just chilling with my boys, you know, chilling with my friends. And, like, school, you know what I'm saying? Like, hanging out. I can't even play video games with them because, you know, we don't have the internet at the time. So, like, I'm playing, like, the computer and everything. So, and I was talking to my brother this season, you know, he got his friends over, but, like, I'm quarantined in my room, which made no sense, too. You know, my mom was bugging, but, yeah, bro, that was my story.
So this one wasn't, like, the most out there, I will admit. However, he did bring up a good point, which I thought was really interesting. I wanted to hear your thoughts on it. A lot of people on Twitter have been saying, like, oh, so you mean I got to be self-quarantined for the next couple weeks? I'm just going to be, like, eating chips and watching shows and playing, like, Madden, you know, or FIFA mm-hmm. or whatever. But back then, you didn't have the interconnectivity that you do now, you know?
No. You were just at the house.
Yeah, you're just at the house. Like, I mean, you couldn't be playing online games. I mean, AOL Instant Messenger wasn't what it is now.
Oh, you know? Oh, oh, wow. You're so young that you can't even think back before our time.
Okay,
before
okay.
No, I'm just sitting here like, man, I hope you like to read. Right? Like, I had gone far back in the time machine before AOL Instant Messenger and high-speed internet in the house, because that'd be the other thing, too. You just can't keep tying up mama's phone line on the 56K modem. Nah, I had taken it back to, I hope you have a thirst for knowledge.
Well, I remember dial-up. I remember, you know, trying to get, waiting like 5 minutes just to get online, but... AOL Instant Messenger was a while ago, man. That was still like 20 years ago.
Gabe, you say you remember dial-up. I remember the day we got dial-up. That's what I'm trying to say to you. Like, there was a time even before the dial-up, and if you had a situation like this then, like when the yellow fever was around, oh, man, I can't imagine how many families and marriages broke up. All y'all got is each other? Yeah. But ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, I want to say thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to My Computer Career. Thank you, ZipRecruiter. Thank you, 5-Hour Energy. Also, thank you to Goodyear. We'd also like to thank our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Sangeeta Singh Kurtz. She's a senior writer at The Cut. Check out her story on Komodo Dragons conceiving babies all by themselves. Yeah. Thank you to Greg Rosalski of NPR. Check out his story on the modernization of toilets everywhere in the world, apparently, but America. Also, thank you to Tanae Hudson of Madam Noir. Check out her story on Megan Thee Stallion and the defenses of her 2.8 GPA. You herbs are really trying to knock her for a 2.8 GPA. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.